Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Okay, I'm very pleased. Can everyone hear me fine? All those people in Aberystwyth and all these other places. I'm very pleased to be able to open today's discussion and to flag up a number of key themes, many of which I'm sure will be covered in much more detail and with much more expertise by the other speakers. In a way, it's easiest to go first in some sense, but when I looked at what other people were doing, I was thinking, well, Colin will talk about this and Will will talk about that, but I'll do my best to provide an overview. The brief I was given was to talk about the changing landscape for international student recruitment. And I think it's no exaggeration to say that we are at a crossroads. If we look back over the last 10 years, we can see that over this period, the number of international students has grown dramatically. And their experience, as assessed by their satisfaction levels, has also improved in almost all areas. For a decade, the UK higher education sector has recruited both successfully and impressively. International student numbers have doubled, and we've benefited from two phases of a government-backed strategy to internationalise our students, the Prime Minister's initiative. And I think as a result, and Aaron's already alluded to this, we've established for the UK what we can consider an export industry which benefits each individual institution. Like Aaron, I believe very strongly that there are huge educational advantages in having very mixed groups of students, but also our local communities, business, investment, foreign policy and British influence around the world. But as well as increasing numbers, British universities have also worked hard to improve the experience of international students. And international students are more satisfied with almost every aspect of university life in comparison with 5 years ago. So if you look at, and Will will probably talk about this afternoon, if you look at the International Student Barometer, you'll see that since 2006 to 2011, satisfaction levels have increased in nearly all areas. So standard of teaching, satisfaction up 80 to 87%. Careers advice, satisfaction up 59 to 69%. Learning support, satisfaction up 77 to 86%. So there's been a massive increase, not just in numbers, and I think this is an important point, but in the quality of what everybody is doing and the satisfaction of our students. The only area where there's been a significant decrease in satisfaction between 2006 and 2011 was earning money. Their satisfaction dropped by 3%. So this is a huge success, absolutely. As I say, not just numbers, but the quality of what UK universities have been providing at a time when there's been competition from other countries. So that sounds great. So why do I say we're at a crossroads? Is it not just we can carry on? Someone said to me in the introductory period, one university had visited and talked about turning the tap of international students on, as though some of they were just there and they could have more or less as they saw fit. Well, why do I say we're at a crossroads? Well, I think the landscape has changed, both domestically in the UK and in other countries. And I think those two things together, the changes in the UK, the changes in other countries, make things a lot different and a lot more challenging. And I think there's been two key changes. Aaron's already alluded to one of these, domestically, to the home EU student funding system and to the visa system. Now, the changes to our domestic fee regime have caused extensive confusion overseas, with many believing that international student fees may rise in the same way. I visit a lot overseas, as you can imagine, and all the visits I made last year, I had to reassure alumni and prospective students that the funding changes made no difference to international student fees. There was a widespread belief that somehow things were going to change for international students. The changes also created the impression in some quarters that British higher education was in crisis, and I picked up that a lot as well. So you'd visit Saudi and people would say, well, we've seen all these pictures of riots in the streets or whatever it was, and there's great concern that there were cuts and difficulties, and it was very damaging, I think, for our reputation. My impression now is that phase is largely past. We might hope, actually, that the new domestic fee regime will help international students. Why will it help international students? Well, it will inevitably raise expectations amongst our own, the home students, who will demand, quite rightly, you know, better student services to support and so on and so forth. And that demand from our home students, I think, will then improve things for international students. Nevertheless, the impact of the changes in the fee regime, which have made things much less stable, much less predictable, will continue to reverberate in perhaps unpredictable ways. If you look, for example, at the pattern of applications that UCAS reported, this is the ones that they reported at the beginning of January, so these aren't the final figures. Nationally, at that point, applications to study non-European languages were down by 20%. Great concern for me, since that's one of the things our institution specialises in. For art and design, applications were down 14.5%. For social studies, 12%. So although overall, the latest figures they've released suggest that applications aren't down overall too much, I think there's going to be big shifts across subjects. And those big shifts across subjects could have the effect of making some areas less attractive to international students if, for example, fewer UK students are studying them. So that's the kind of domestic side in terms of the fee regime. And Aaron alludes to this, the issue of immigration. And the wider debate on immigration, I think, has cast a real shadow over our endeavours, with a lot of people questioning about whether we should continue to bring quite so many international students to the UK each year. Aaron referred to the Prime Minister. We might think of last week's headlines in the Daily Mail. Headline in the Daily Mail last week was, "Migration is killing off jobs." Is, in a big capital. Now, they also critiqued a little report that said, but there was this other report that didn't quite say that. So they did actually, as good journalists, mention the other report. But that was the headline. You know, migration is killing off jobs. And that is rather typical. And we've not managed yet to change the perception, I think, that international students are part of an immigration problem. I think universities did work well, as Aaron alluded to change the more catastrophic features of the system that were proposed. But I think there is still an issue about us making clear that actually international students are a great thing for our country. They're not a problem. Some of the recent changes in visa rules and regulations, and I'm sure Colin will talk about those more later, may well result in the UK being less attractive to many in the future. Now, some of this was seen, and the chief executive officer, as you teaser, is here, so he'll insist that I wave this at the cameras. This is a report that UKISA published last month of a survey carried out in October of 5,000 international students who arrived for this academic year. It's a very interesting report because the results show that many of them are very frustrated by some of our systems and procedures, and a significant number of them are disaffected by some of the new rules. In particular, there's widespread unhappiness about the abolition of the post-study work scheme. So here's just some quotes. "The ending of the post-study work route really affected me a lot. If not for the application process I'd made, I would have changed my mind and studied somewhere else." Here's another one. "The removal of post-study work visa has stranded my future. I spent a huge amount of money to study in this country, had to take a bank loan to fund it. It's making my career uncertain." And it goes through. There's another one. "No post-study work visa is hampering me to finish my pre-registration training. 15 of my friends had initially planned to study in a wide range of universities in the UK and got their offers, then chose to drop their plans because of the cancellation of the post-study work scheme." So I mean, that's the thing that comes out as a major issue from this, to do with the work scheme. Now, some of this is about detail, but some of it is about overall perceptions, which is why UKISA is keen for UKBA, FCO, British Council, to develop, as a matter of urgency, a positive campaign emphasising that the UK is welcoming. We want international students. We want well-qualified students to come here. So that's the domestic scene. It's clear that the UK is different. The landscape is different here. What about overseas? Now, as we know, it's not just in the UK that the number of international students has increased. Over the last 20 years, the number of foreign students in OECD countries has doubled. OECD countries receive about 85% of the world's foreign students. Most are concentrated in just about six countries. I'm sure you all know this. USA has the biggest group of them. The UK, Germany, France, Australia, Japan. And our biggest competitors hitherto have been the US and Australia, and I think we need to continue to worry about the US and Australia. What I think is now different is that other countries are taking the internationalisation of their universities with a new level of seriousness. And I just want to give two examples of this, one of which I think is having quite an immediate effect, the other I think will have a longer term effect, which is Germany and Japan. Now, in Germany, there's been a big recent growth in foreign students studying at postgraduate level. This seems to be a consequence of a large increase in the number of degree programmes being offered in English. There's now over 300 programmes taught in English at German universities. Competition on fees. German fees are significantly lower than those in the UK, so the total cost if you're taking a degree is lower. And a much more strategic approach by Germany and its universities to international partnerships. So the DAAD was given funding in 2001 to launch a project to financially support German universities with their export endeavours overseas. And they've supported a whole series of export projects funded by DAAD. So if a German university wants to get funding to launch a collaborative arrangement, it has to go through a thorough process with them, with a lot of emphasis being placed on long-term sustainability. And that's had quite an impact. So in other words, they've had a Prime Minister's initiative, but of their own form. It's had a big impact. If you look at their excellent public database, if you're interested, it's called Higher Education Compass. It lists all the arrangements that German universities have with the institutions overseas. Shows there's over now 500 cooperations between German and Chinese universities. That's a particular interesting area. So Germany has taken it seriously, and I think we'll see Germany becoming increasingly important over the years. Now, Japan, a country I know much better than Germany, but anyway, Japan is some years behind Germany in terms of internationalisation. It set up the Global 30 project in July 2008, and that aims to boost international recruitment, so it increases to 300,000 international students, not that many, by 2020. What they did in Japan was to identify 13 core universities for receiving and educating international students, and they get special funding of around £2 to £3 million a year to help them achieve that aim. So they're saying, we're concentrating on our 13 international universities, and those are the ones we're focusing on. And the idea is that those universities will take a number of steps to create an attractive educational environment for international students. So what will they do? They'll establish courses which English-only degrees can be obtained. So that's the teaching in English part. That's very important to them. They'll improve the systems for receiving international students. They'll provide internship opportunities at Japanese corporations. That's interesting given what this emphasis on careers and post-study work. They'll provide international students with opportunities to learn about Japanese language and culture. And then they'll promote strategic international cooperation. And in particular, one of the targets is that all of these universities should have an overseas office, two overseas offices, I think, per university. So, for example, Ritsumeikan, which is one of these universities, has its overseas office at SOAS as part of this arrangement. Now, my own view of this is it's on a fairly small scale, and it's not had much impact yet. But I stress the yet. In the long term, Japan and Japanese universities have a very strong motivation to boost international student. Why? Because the population of young adults in Japan is falling dramatically, and they have a huge amount of spare capacity. There's 900 universities there. Their number of 18-year-olds is dropping, so they've got the capacity to educate people. They've got good universities, so they've got excellent reputations. That'll be attractive for students. So in the longer term, you might think, who cares about Japan? But in the longer term, Japan's just another example of a country that's taking internationalisation seriously. So, developments in countries like Germany and Japan, where internationalisation is being made a priority, developments in other countries like India to boost the capacity of domestic students, means that British universities will have to work harder to maintain their competitive edge. Aaron mentioned that we were ranked 2 in a survey. I was thinking, I was going to quote the Global Gauge survey that the British Council carried out last year that some of you will be aware of. That ranked countries on how, on openness, degree quality, how widely degrees were recognised, support for overseas students. It ranked Germany top overall. That got a certain amount of coverage in the press. And I think that's interesting in terms of the future. Japan was ranked 7th, by the way. The US was 6th. So we should worry about Germany the most, I think, but not forget about the others. Now, Will Archer, who's speaking this afternoon, wrote last year in a foreword to a PMI document. I like this, which is why I'm quoting it. There's nothing inevitable about student satisfaction, nothing constant about student expectations, absolutely no guarantee that the surge in international student numbers coming to the UK will continue. UK universities used to be able to claim a head start of several centuries on some of their rivals, But age becomes irrelevant when reputations are defined now. And I think that's right. And we see, if you think about this, you also see this amongst British students who now will look at universities, oh, am I going to go to Australia? Am I going to go to the States? I haven't come across one yet that says, shall I go to Japan? But no doubt it will happen. So I think there's three key issues that face us. Employability in careers, reputation and value for money. I just want to say something very briefly about those and then finish. Employability in careers first. According to the International Student Barometer, careers are the greatest concern of students and the biggest challenge for us internationally. It's also in the UK's survey. Australia's night review of their student visa programme led to the introduction of the new post-study work arrangements and a further extension of that last October. That's a good example of how the concerns of international students about work and careers can be addressed at a national level. And I think we need to continue to argue for that within the UK. But you can also address them at a local level. A number of universities have taken action by introducing careers advice specially tailored for international students. I like, for example, the careers blog for international students at the University of Manchester. Really interesting. And we have to continue to argue for modifications in the visa regime. Hope the government will come to recognise that some of the visa changes are becoming too restrictive and harming what is another priority, which is economic growth. So that's one thing. The second is reputation. Despite all the changes in the last year, UK education continues to be held in very high regard throughout the world. Every survey shows, in general, very high student satisfaction. The UK also does extremely well in international league tables. There's 12 UK universities in the top 100, according to the Times Higher. For comparison, Germany has 4. We just have to remember, I think, that reputations can be damaged quite easily. They can be damaged nationally, they can be damaged per university. So if we want a national example, think about those racist attacks on Indian universities in Australia. They had a hugely damaging impact on Australian higher education recruitment. Or think about another example, the impact of the Gaddafi funding on the reputation of LSE, which is continually mentioned when other reports of LSE come up. So very damaging for LSE's individual reputation. So both nationally and individually, reputation, it seems to me, is key, and we need to protect that. And the final thing is value for money. I think that's an important issue for all students. They're paying a lot. They should get a good deal in return. At the national level, we've benefited from exchange rate changes in recent years. That's kept the cost down. But I think for institutions, that implies a continual focus on efficiency and effectiveness, but also looking at other options, trying to find, you know, the development of 2+2 collaborative arrangements, mixed modes of delivery, things that actually make the programme good value for money for students, because the value for money does not sit still. So the landscape's changing. I think we're at a crossroads. I'm actually extremely optimistic of the future. When I look at British universities compared to the universities I visit overseas, I think we offer students a great deal, and I'm confident that the UK will remain one of, if not the, most attractive destination for international students in the future.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.